looking to put pressure on the school to rein in these quasi genocidal comments from a English a Montreal school board teacher.
Well, I'll be talking to Anas Al-Salah, a Canadian Palestinian, in the second half. And yeah, there's lots to be done in this country. It's easy to point fingers across the water, but how Canada behaves is a vital issue as well. Eve, thanks a lot for coming on again. And you can get out of that war zone now.
Thank you.
Until the next time, Eve.
Thank you, guys.
I gotta say, I'll be back after the break with Anas Al-Salah. I'll play that little clip that I mentioned too, that Eve was talking about, up on Twitter right now, of the demonstration in Port-au-Prince against the reacting to the announcement of Canada's largesse.
Je dis à nous, le Canada, les États-Unis, la France, la priorité parfaite pour Haïti. Je dis à qui rend Haïti bac à développer. Je dis à nous bac à faire Canada pour nous développer. Canada pour tout personnel, tout pour qui connaissent ce déjà. Libre la veille. Je dis à Canada va débloquer 42 millions de dollars de GV pour nous gratter nous. Et nous disons à pour nous dire Canada avec ses filles.
When nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle has taken you for walks in the park, but that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday. Welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, the deleterious effect of Canada's pernicious foreign policies are not limited to just creating conflict, death, and retarding the social development of poorer nations. With its egregious and illegal actions regarding the current genocide in Gaza, this country has shown the world it's ready to join history's first tier of global infamy. Anas Al-Salah is a third-generation refugee descended from Haifa, occupied Palestine, currently residing here on the Saanich Peninsula, Coast Salish territory. Anas has been a featured speaker at the Gaza Solidarity March and Rally in Victoria, carrying on now into its fifth month. Welcome to the program, Anas.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
Well, it's my great pleasure, of course. Now, Anas, what are you hearing, firstly, from friends and relatives remaining in Palestine about the situation there?
Well, I have distant relatives there. Like, my family has been expelled from Palestine in 1948, and none of my direct family members remain. We're all kind of diaspora Palestinians. But of those distant relatives that and friends that you know, I've been getting news from, I mean, it's you know, horrific news. The West Bank is faring also no better than Gaza, not much better. There is also a lot of shooting and death and expelling going on. So, yeah, I mean, I have nothing to add. Like, the genocide is being live streamed, and for everyone with, you know, a phone can just get online and see what's going on. People are live streaming the murder and the destruction that's going on. So that's how it is right now.
Yeah, well, for those in this country that might not be technologically savvy or know where to look, if they depend on the CBC and CTV and the major news networks for their information, they probably don't know that hundreds have been killed in the West Bank and thousands have been arrested. More are being displaced every day. As you say, there has been actually bombings there too by the Israeli Air Force, dropping bombs on neighborhoods in the West Bank, not in Gaza.
Correct. Correct. Yeah. They're using drones.
It's not coming through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, for people who aren't able to get to the news, I suggest that they get on Telegram. It's a phone. It's an application on your phone where you can follow specific news agencies, like Al Jazeera is a good source. But if you want, like, direct from Gaza, there's Times of Gaza, which is a good source. There's Eye on Palestine, which is another group. And you can find these agencies or news groups as well on Twitter and probably on Instagram as well, but I'm not sure if Instagram is still allowing such news agencies to exist.
Yeah, well, this is a big issue as well, because there is all these wonderful new platforms and empowering devices that make it possible for the people to move around the traditional news gathering and dissemination services. But they, in turn, are run by massive corporations that are under a lot of pressure to whitewash what's going on. And Twitter, you mentioned.
Even like on my Twitter feed, I'm getting pro-Zionist propaganda showing up. And I get the feeling that the pro-Zionists on their feed, they're not getting any anti-Zionist propaganda or anti-Zionist truth, let's say. And it's very concerning, you know, like that even, you know, the gaslighting that's going on these main tech platforms is just, for me, like as somebody who's lived and experienced the Israeli gaslighting and oppression, it's pretty obvious to me when I see the propaganda, but I am concerned that, you know, people who sit on the fence about this issue, and they have heard of the death and destruction, but then they see all these justifications, which are completely, you know, how do you justify killing 12,000 children in less than 5 months? You can check the Toronto Sun and the National Post for such. They don't even mention the children. They just mention, oh, Hamas, October 7th. And they don't put the Hamas attack in context. They don't say that Gaza has been a concentration camp for the past 17 years. And these are people who are breaking out of that prison and trying to return to the lands they were kicked out from in 1948. All of that context is non-existent in mainstream media.
Well, and we've seen that the strategy is just throw up all kinds of outrageous allegations, allow from the Israeli side, and allow the legacy media, the New York Times, some of these that have a lot of credibility in certain quarters, to repeat these claims. And then when they're refuted, like the beheaded babies and the babies in ovens and these mass yep. rapes and so forth, those aren't retracted. Or if they are, it's retracted in such a minimal way that the
damage has already been done.
And the lies keep being repeated.
Yeah. And I would highly recommend going to Substack to check independent investigative journalists who are debunking all that propaganda. I really like Max Blumenthal from The Gray Zone and Katie Harper. I think it's Breakthrough News.
Katie Halpern is an independent, and she does a lot of really mm-hmm. terrific work. And yeah, I agree. The Gray Zone is fantastic.
Yeah. So you can see all the facts and like the rigorous kind of debunking. And it's so sad that these journalists always have to be on the defensive in kind of just lie after lie. It's just a torrent of lies that they just have to keep debunking, instead of focusing on the actual genocide. But that's the world we live in. Another, I highly recommend everybody follow Electronic Intifada. And it's Palestinian voices, pro-resistance voices who are speaking for the Palestinian, you know, right to self-determination. And so Electronic Intifada is a great source as well.
On the Twitter, I looked you up, but there's a lot of Anas al-Salas on the Twitter here. What's your Twitter handle?
You can find me. It's at Anas in Palestine.
Ah, there, and that's how you're introduced at the demonstrations. They always introduce you as Anas from Palestine, and I wondered if that was because you wanted to keep your name secret.
No big deal. It's just. You know, I'm not very active on Twitter. I just repost and follow the news. I don't have any like personal statements or opinions that I express there. It's just my way of tracking the Hasbara as well as the actual facts.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Anas al-Salas, and he is a third-generation refugee from Haifa, descended from people that have been a part of the diaspora, the great diaspora of 1948. And now living here in Victoria on the Coast Salish territory. And as a lot of your message, when you're speaking at these, you've spoken on a couple of occasions, at least that I've been there for, but you focus a lot more on Canada than on what's going on in Palestine, or at least drawing parallels. Do you want to discuss a little bit about the parallels, the colonial parallels that you see here in Canada and mirrored in Palestine?
Of course. I mean, your other guest, Yves Engler, has an excellent article on Mondo Vice, which I am using as a reference now. It's called The Reasons for Canada's Unwavering Support for Israel. It's an overlapping, intertwining relationship between Canada's colonialism and Zionist colonialism. There is no separation, really. To tell you the truth, when I first came to Canada, I had this naive notion that they have made kind of a peace, or they have made, or Canada wasn't as, let's say, harmful or genocidal towards the indigenous peoples here. And then, you know, when I came here and I, you know, met like-minded people and people who are also indigenous and telling me about the present struggles that indigenous peoples are facing with their territorial sovereignty, their right to exercise their traditions and their traditional practices, hunting and foraging and so on. I realized that the bitter irony is that I, as a Palestinian refugee, have become a settler myself, and it hit me hard. And I seriously considered going back to Lebanon, where I will still remain a refugee. But then I was encouraged to stay and help uplift indigenous voices here, and that's what I'm trying to do. The second awakening that has hit me hard as well is when this war started on Gaza 5 months ago, and I realized how I am surrounded. I am knee deep, or even up to my neck, in a pro-Zionist environment that gives no worth to Palestinian lives. Or any lives that are anti-Zionist, like even Jewish people here who are anti-Zionist are being called anti-Semitic. It's really ridiculous, but this is the case. And it's Canada's history of supporting Zionism is clear. And it's only in the past few months that I've been awakened to how blatant it is. I always had kind of the British Empire in the back of my mind as the main culprit in supporting the Zionist project. But yeah, like recently in the past few months, I've learned just how much, you know, Canada and the British Empire are really inseparable in their support for this racist colonial settler project in Palestine. So that's the gist of it.
Oh, sorry to cut in. Yeah, well, you can be forgiven for coming here with these, what you might think are naive illusions, but because they're shared by, I would argue, the vast majority of Canadians. They would bristle at being called settlers. And they say, what do you mean? I was born here. I'm 5-10 generations Canadian. What do you mean I'm a settler? I'm a Canadian. They trying to bridge that idea is almost, I don't know, I wouldn't want to say impossible, but it would take a lot of work. How you say in your speeches that we have to liberate ourselves from this colonial mindset, and that it's a long and boring effort. How does one go about that?
Yeah, I mean, I think what is the first obstacle to admitting this state of being a settler, I think the first obstacle is a sense of being threatened, that if I admit that I am a settler, then I will lose, I have no legitimacy here. Like somebody is going to, in the future down the line, these indigenous peoples are going to rise up and say, you know, you have no place here, you have to leave. And this is also an issue in Palestine as well. I mean, now that there are three generations of Jewish Europeans settlers in Palestine, They are also, of course, more than afraid that a free, liberated Palestine, a one-state democracy, is going to somehow get them expelled from the lands which they have colonized. I'm not going to say that this is not going to happen partially. I'm not going to say that it's going to be easy or a walk in the park to fully liberate my country, or even to, let's say, decolonize Canada. I'm not going to say that, you know, people will lose some of their privileges, or that, you know, it's going to be a tough awakening. But the first step is to realize, like, I, as a now a person with Canadian citizenship and, you know, a house and a mortgage and all that, I mean, I have so much privilege in this country compared to the people who are indigenous to this country. And so I can imagine that it is the, and it is the same case in Palestine. Like, these settlers have so much rights and privileges in an apartheid state that is much worse than the current situation in Canada. And so the first step is to just, I guess, try to connect with indigenous peoples and try to just understand their narrative and their perspective and their point of view. And I've been trying with I tried with a neighbor, and I gave him one of Joe Sacco's books. It's called Paying the Land, and it's a graphic novel in the form of, you know, a journalistic graphic novel that reports on indigenous peoples in the Northwest Territories and their history and their struggles in the present. And he took really well to it, and he's a conservative Canadian. But then I shared with him the book of Joe Sacco called Palestine, the graphic novel, and I recently asked him about it, and he said, "Oh, I'm sorry, I think I donated that to the thrift store, and I didn't really finish it." And I mean, it really hit me hard, and I kind of contacted him about this, like, and you know, it's in the middle of a genocide, and I thought that there would be interest in knowing more about the Palestinian situation. You know, I said to him in my message, you know, like, there's 12,000 children killed, people are starving. I mean, is there something more you need to know about this to understand how destructive settler colonialism is? And I haven't heard back from him since, and I don't think he's talking to me anymore. So there you go. I mean, this is just a personal experience, you know, a one-on-one. Somebody who is a neighbor and somebody who I consider a friend, and that's how it is. Like, it's very hard for people to break away from this mindset. And I mean, I'm trying my best here to be compassionate and sympathetic. And again, like, anybody who thinks that decolonizing means kicking out the settlers or like killing settlers is out of their mind. This is not the point. The point is to lift up the people who have been trampled upon and have been not given any rights, and to make sure that they have equal opportunity in living on their own land. And this is only like the minimum we can do.
Well, irregardless of whose land it is, and I'm not disputing the fact, but people can't be treated this way wherever they are. I mean, this is entirely outrageous. You talk about overcoming, like, each of us, and this is from the Canadian perspective, but I would say more broadly as well, we have to overcome our complacency. I think those are pretty kind words. It seems to me that 98%, I've been to many of these demonstrations down at the legislature. They happen usually Sundays, but sometimes Saturdays. It's been going on for five months. And we see, what I've noticed is the same 300 or 400 people, if the numbers fluctuate, but mostly the same people in a population base of maybe 300 or 400,000 in Victoria and the larger area. It seems to me like 90% or 99% of Canadians don't care at all.
I think you're right, sadly. I feel like the demonstrations, to be honest, is like personally, it's my way of letting off steam, because week in, week out, there's no change to the hell that Israel has been inflicting upon Palestinians in Gaza and the West Bank, and even inside of 1948 occupied Palestine. Like it's like the amount of, it's a fascist state basically, practicing very strict censorship and very strict policing on anyone who is demonstrating against the war in 1948 Palestine. So yeah, to your point, I mean the complacency and the ignorance of what's going on in Palestine, it's sad. And the only thing I can do is, you know, to speak up more and more and try to reach more media channels. But it's again like the realization that I had in the past 5 months about how pro-Zionist the society here is, and how much the media twists and obfuscates in order to present the Zionist crime, war crimes, in a good light. I mean, they're trying very, very hard. It's almost an impossible job, but somehow they keep people complacent, and they keep people convinced that this is somehow an act of self-defense. So if you have any tips other than, you know, speaking up, speaking on the radio, writing articles, it's a gradual process, and I'm happy that I can see that there is a change on the world stage in terms of recognizing the Palestinian struggle. It's just that here in Canada and the US, it's really the belly of the beast in terms of colonialism and Zionism. And it's going to be a very hard uphill battle. But if there's something that the genocide in Gaza has affected on me, it's my now lifetime commitment to promoting the Palestinian cause. It's not something that I've been very active in the past, you know, in my life before, save the occasional protest or the occasional donation. But now it's unwavering to me, the need. Like if we don't stand up, if we don't speak up, nobody is going to do it. And so I feel that this is my lifetime goal now.
Well, Anas, you talk in one of your addresses, at least, you talked about the pillars of this. They are, quote, callous injustice system, colonial police boots on the neck of the First Peoples, the construction industry and the war industry and the resource extraction industry, and mostly the finance industry that holds these others all together and makes them possible. So at one of these events, you invited people to come and speak with you about divestment from the major banks in Canada that support these industries and out of country, the foreign interventions and other adventures in capitalism that are so harmful to the people of those places.
I mean, it is a Palestinian agenda and strategy to boycott, divest, and sanction Israel. So it is very important that we realize what products and services we are purchasing, and making sure that none of it is supporting Israel in any way. I'm not for the distinction between the illegal occupation, so-called illegal occupation of the West Bank and Gaza, and then like there's, let's say, Israel proper. To me, it's all occupied Palestine. And if we intend to decolonize Palestine in its entirety, then I make no distinction. Any Israeli products or services, they have to be boycotted. They have to be divested from and sanctioned. And so here in Canada, there are a lot of, unfortunately, the Canadian government uses our tax dollars to support the Zionist project. And I'm not sure, this is something that you know, is out of my hand at the moment. I don't know how to change that policy. But in the meantime, as you mentioned, I did call out the big banks and asked people who have savings in their big banks to divest to a local credit union. And I've started the process myself about a month ago, and it is a slow, boring, and effort, time-consuming process. But you have to do it; otherwise, nobody else will. And it's only these small steps that are taken in multitudes that will slowly pick away at the colonial kind of behemoth.
Yes, well, sorry to step in and ask. It reminds me of the tale of the hummingbird and the forest fire. And the hummingbird is seen carrying little droplets of water, and the other animals say, "Well, what are you doing?" And it says, "Well, I'm doing what I can." And it may not be a little; it may just be a little, but we have to all do something. Sadly, Anas, we're fast out of time here, but thanks a lot for coming on the program. I recommend people go and check out, if they're able, Anas's Twitter feed, Anas in Palestine, A-N-A-S in Palestine, all one word, at Anas in Palestine. There is a place. Thanks very much, Anas, for coming on and sharing some of your thinking on this today with us.
Thank you, Chris, for giving us this platform. Thank you.
It's my great pleasure, and thanks to Eve Angler as well. There's much more, too much more, but that's all I've got for this week. Until the next time, thanks again.
The Zionist occupation refuses to permit building new Palestinian homes in most of the occupied territories, and it moreover demolishes Palestinian buildings periodically for a lack, quote-unquote, lack of permit. The audacity of handing out building permits on occupied land. So, what are the stone quarries and mason workers of the West Bank to do? These masons are well known across the region for their skills in cutting and shaping limestone. They are forced to sell their products and labor to Israeli construction companies. The bitter irony: Zionist settlers are sleeping under roofs that were built by the hands of the very Palestinians they oppress. Any form of sovereign Palestinian industry or infrastructure is either exploited or destroyed. The Gaza airport, which began operating in 1998, was bombed, then bulldozed by the Israelis in 2001. Nothing remains of Gaza's infrastructure today, not even the farmland, which was bombed, bulldozed, and polluted by the Zionist terrorists who seek to starve the Palestinian population, to thin it out, in the words of their war criminal, Netanyahu. We see the same pattern here on this land. Ancient forests that the First Nations have tended to for thousands of years are cut down without regard to their spiritual or environmental value and used to produce more and more settlements. Oil pipelines are forcibly pushed on unceded indigenous territories, threatening precious ecosystems and indigenous ways of life. All this happens under the eyes of a callous justice system, or shall we say injustice system, that sucks dry the finances of First Nations fighting in the courts. All this happens under the lockstep of colonial police boots that trample indigenous peoples defending their own lands. The construction industry, the resource extraction industry, the war industry, these are the three pillars of colonial regimes. And the finance industry is the glue that connects it all together. Canadian big banks like RBC, Scotiabank, BMO, and TD facilitate the easy transfer of Canadian investors' funds to destructive corporations like Elbit, the Israeli company whose weapons kill in Palestine and Kashmir and other oppressed nations. Like Caterpillar, the American company whose equipment demolishes Palestinian homes. And TC Energy, the Canadian oil company that hides behind RCMP militarized raids on Wet'suwet'en territory. There is much we can do here and now to pull the rug from under these three pillars. We can start with our own dollars. My friends, we need to put our money where our mouth is.
Their message always to everybody through all their advertising, all their PR, everything is, we are your friends. And it's like, no, you are not our friends. Friends are not people whose bottom line is how much profit they can make out of you. It is completely different.
Guerrilla Radio, knowing who our real friends are since 1999.
We're running out of time to put out a fire.